Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 264 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I am going to send you over to Jason Rugard in a moment. He's got a rundown for us. But more importantly, if you hear these clicks, hear that? That's me. Because we record these live with no editing. If you can believe it, we do it. I'm sending you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown.
We have no CGI either.
No CGI. No editing. Yeah, nothing. Whatever you hear is us. It's us.
This is a real deal live podcast now on Thursday nights instead of our traditional Sunday, Monday morning podcast. This is now a Thursday night, Friday morning podcast. So catch us now later in the week.
We switched. Better. Should be better, hopefully.
Yeah, just a little refresher here. So, of course, as always, and if you don't know how we do this after 264 episodes, let me refresh your memory. We go to the box office prediction game. Go to Box Office Ace and get in the game with us. We're going to be talking about Jupiter Ascending. We got Seventh Son, which finally sees the light of day after, what, like a year in development hell. And SpongeBob is making a return to theaters almost, what, 15 years after the original, if not longer, premiered. Also, a little bit of trivia. I'll get back to the trivia news that I had done last week. We're going to continue that, as well as some movie news and reviews for A Most Violent Year. Trevor saw Volcano Zombies, which has a very intriguing title.
The Burning Dead.
The Burning Dead Volcano Zombies. Mm. Yeah, The Burning Dead.
Yes.
Sounds like my hemorrhoids. And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. We're going to talk about Wild Card, Captain America 2. A Lifetime film starring Rob Lowe, Beautiful and Twisted, in that Rob Lowe. I mean, is he not just doing the best work of his career in those DirecTV ads or what? I love those things.
I don't know. I mean, seriously? Seriously?
I don't know what he's done better. I love DirecTV. I love it. Those things really just get me going. Right. I like the meathead Rob Lowe the best, personally. Vampire Academy, you saw. I want to know your thoughts on that because I was wondering when I saw it because I put that on my top 10 worst of last year list. And also, Trailer Addict, we have the Magic Mike XXL trailer, Poltergeist, the Furious 7 feature trailer, and a couple trailers for some independent films, Beyond the Reach, Walter, and Digging Up the Marrow. So we got a packed show on this episode, but first we're going to get into the Box Office Ace prediction game.
My bad.
Mikey Douglas.
Not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
All right.
You ever think anyone's ever called Michael Douglas Mikey Douglas? Like, do you think anyone in his life? Or I think he was Michael the second he was born.
It was like the last time he ever spoke, but he was like, Mikey Douglas. He was dead. I believe that. Yeah, sure.
I think the only person that might have called him that's Danny DeVito. Like Danny and Mikey. You know what I mean? I just feel like.
Yeah, he could get away with it, though. Yeah.
Hey, Danny DeVito's performance in those Romancing the Stone and Jewel of the Nile, those are unheralded comedic performances, by the way.
Those are good
I want those noted. That is an unheralded comedic performance. I think he's an underrated comedian. Is Danny DeVito a comedian?
An underrated comedian? Are you kidding me?
Is he a comedian?
Hardly underrated. Well, comedic and dramatic actors is kind of a thin line, isn't it?
But has anyone ever referenced Danny DeVito's name in like the annals of great comedians?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. I think he's probably more noted as a comedic actor than a dramatic actor by far.
I just think of him now as a director because he's, made some really good movies behind the camera.
Oh, no. As of lately, he's done mostly TV stuff, but any fan of It's Always Sunny will know. Comedic. Oh, but even show. It's Always Sunny, as comedic as it is, it has dramatic aspects to it. So and he's great good. Show. He's great no matter what.
Well, I'm glad we solved that Danny DeVito mystery.
Like, we did.
Already got that wrapped up in episode 264.
Got down to the bottom of that. There's Danny DeVito. Dramatic? Comedic? Dramedic?
On next episode, we're going to figure out if Christopher Lloyd is a comedian or an actor.
Or is he dead?
In 265. No, he's actually got a movie coming out.
How is he still alive? How are these people still... People are living forever nowadays.
Because Christopher Lloyd was only like 35 when he played Doc Brown, who was like 60.
Oh, bullshit. He was like 100.
Like Al Pacino.
He's at least 300 now.
I thought Al Pacino was old dead. As shit in 1990.
I think these people are all dead, and I think that CGI has really just frog leaped itself, and we can't even realize you know what it's capable of.
That's right. If they can put CGI abs on Nicolas Cage, they can rectify Pacino from the grave. We've got it. All right.
But what are we getting at here? What are we looking at? Last week's numbers here.
Bob. We got some numbers there.
Last week's numbers. What are we looking at?
We're looking at a bunch of bombs. The Loft came in at what, like 3 million, somewhere in there, three change. You hear about this thing?
How did that happen?
Yeah, because no one would.
Everything tanked, right? Nothing hit double digits. The Loft did 2.7, which is like whoa bad. Black or White did 6.2. You're looking at Project Almanac as our number two, but number one of the new stuff at 8.3. Only 8.3. So way the biggest off. Disappointment we're looking at. I mean, Black or White, okay, fine. The Loft, yes, you're way off, but still no one cares. But Project Almanac's the one that's surprising at 8.3. It's at least 10 million off of what anyone normally would have expected for this to do, right? Am I wrong?
Major catastrophe. But that's what happens when you have the largest viewing audience in history watching the Super Bowl not going to the movies.
Oh, bullshit. 30 million, you know, 30 and a half million went to go see American Sniper in its technically sixth week, you know, if you want to technically get down to it. But right. Sure, third week, whatever. What happened here? This is the younger crowd. You had a lot of stuff open up during this same weekend that has done way better than this.
Nobody went. This looked like a retread. It looked good to us.
But why does this? Are you afraid now for Jupiter Ascending? For another movie that's had the same problems that Project Almanac has?
I think that Jupiter Ascending comes out on top, but I think even Seventh Son affects it.
More than this, but sure. But yeah, Seventh Son's fucked to begin with. But
yeah, but they're both going for the same audience. Why release those on the same weekend?
Is more, but Jupiter Ascending has more of the probability of making what Project Almanac probability had for this weekend, right?
Yeah, I actually lowered my estimates.
So what is this impact on that? Yeah, right? You almost have to, right?
Absolutely. I mean, what are you going with at Jupiter Ascending? Because I'm hearing anywhere between 20 to 25 million. Let me look it up. Bullish.
I'm going to say 19 and a half million. I don't think this makes 20 million.
Yeah, sure. I'm actually going 16.
I've heard on the high end, high 20s for this.
IMAX, it's got a push there.
And I wouldn't
format.
Think that wouldn't be ridiculous if the Wachowskis didn't have such kind of a bad run, really. And then with Project Almanac, I think, well, God, you know, who's interested in this?
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to see how this weekend plays out. I think if Jupiter does open well, you have to attribute that to the stars and maybe the marketing.
I think.
That
do you think you're
going to
like
so
this
far.
Movie? I think I'm going to like this movie, but I don't I think like that it,
everything
the majority
heard,
of people are going to like it.
The thing is, this I really liked Cloud Atlas. I really
so
liked
did
Speed
I.
Racer.
That's where when I compare this to those, and then I also look at past performances of movies, especially Project Almanac, which has got to be. Front and center for stuff that's had problems. This has had problems. I can only imagine people aren't going to be so interested.
Well, speaking
and
of problems,
when I look at the trailer, but when you look at the poster, doesn't it remind you of Cloud Atlas? Isn't that an issue?
Yeah,
why would they do that?
I don't know. It's got the same look. It's kind of like that the drawing aspect of it,
yeah.
Like the way it's set up
I
and the colors.
Know. Not a good way to sell this.
The Seventh Son has already opened up across seas and made $82 million, and now it's going to hit stateside this weekend, and I think this is an absolute bomb. I don't even think this makes half of what RIPD made, which was the last high-budgeted Jeff Bridges film. Speaking of, what the fuck is Dreaming with Jeff?
Though.
Wait, you watched the Super Bowl, right?
It's a website. He does, Jeff Bridges is a musician, not a magician.
I thought he was a harlotin. I couldn't tell. He said, I don't know where you going.
So it's So it's a website for some music that he's created that's fairly interesting. It's very legit. It's fairly interesting. It helps you sleep better in some ways.
Honestly,
so an
he
interesting
is now,
idea.
No, he's become fucking Tron.
No,
man.
It
he's
is an interesting idea
Tron.
Because it's not about. Yeah, but he doesn't have to. He can do something artistic and interesting to where it doesn't. It can make money. It doesn't have to make a shitload of money, right? He doesn't have to do something everyone likes. He can do something that he's interested in, and that's what this is.
He spent a lot of money buying a Super Bowl ad.
He didn't. No, not his money though. It's Squarespace. Squarespace is a website design software, which you can go get. It's like $8 a month, $16 a month, depending on what plan you get, and you can run your website on it. That's what the website was. He used that to create his website. And that was the website. So he didn't spend the money on it.
I thought I was honestly seeing a trailer for Seventh Son until nothing happened.
Yeah. Well, 47 Ronin, though. I mean, you're looking at a similar thing to that. So we're going
to
play.
Where do you go to this?
I'm saying similar, real similar to that. I'm going to say 7.5 million, less than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I went a little bit less. I'm saying 6.3 on this one.
Yeah, so we're very similar on that.
SpongeBob now comes back as a live-action movie, which is a little weird to me because...
But it looks good, doesn't it?
It does look good, actually. Yeah, this does look good.
I'm going to tell you, it looks pretty good.
I don't think this really breaks out of the box, though. I think this does right what everyone's saying. I go with 32 on this.
You say breaks out of 32. You got in here 34 and almost 35.
Well, there I went, 34. I forgot what I put in. All right.
34.9. I can look at your thing right here. You almost got 35. I said 37. I think this is a bit of a breakout. I think it's going to do, Smurfs-esque numbers, if not a little more, for sure.
It's not going to do Lego numbers, though.
No. I don't think this does 60 million-esque, which we've seen some family movies break out and really do 60-something, plus dollars. I don't think this does that because it's a bit late, but it could definitely earn it, right? It's not going to do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles numbers, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. That was the absolute surprise. This does have, but used to have that kind of following, though,
35,
back in the day.
High 30s, very decent.
Yeah, so we'll see how this weekend plays out. Hopefully we'll be a little bit more on than last weekend. I still think Jupiter Ascending is going to have a tough time beating through the pack, and wouldn't surprise me if it really falls down farther in the pack than we think. But if you haven't done so, go to Box Office Ace. Get in the game alongside Trevor and I. There's a slew of other people playing, and if you get in early, you can play alongside us. And if you haven't gotten in yet, don't worry, because each month is a separate entity, so you can get in and play as we go along. You haven't missed anything by not getting in the front of the year. But you should, so do it now.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a little aggressive with it tonight.
Whoa, okay.
All right, so last week on the Trivial Trivia... Yeah, we're a little stumped on that. You couldn't recall. Your total recall was very off.
I couldn't. Yeah, I've been bad on a lot of them. But this one I'm going to let you do. I've actually seen this the thing here. And I know this one, but it's a little weird. And I'm going to ask you why, because I haven't seen this movie. So, but go
ahead.
All
right, well, let's go here. So Judd Apatow, who we both like a lot of his work. I think even you like it more than I on some movies.
He's great.
Yeah, so I think so too, in Freaks and Geeks and whatnot. Now, he used to do a lot of script doctoring. Even he and Jon Favreau talk about a script they were working on in doctoring in Dinner for Five, which that never came to fruition. But long story short, he wrote a screenplay for a 1996 sports comedy that stars Dan Aykroyd, Daniel Stern, and Damon Wayans. Now, you either name the movie or name the sport being played in that movie.
Well, I know.
You think you know
Can we just
movie.
Do this right now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, because I know it's basketball.
Yeah.
I know it's Celtics, but the weird thing about this is, and the only reason I know this is because I know the cover of this movie, which features Daniel. Now, Daniel Stern is the person that I'm most recognized. I haven't seen this movie, so to be fair, I don't know the Dan Aykroyd, the Damon Wayans part of it. But the Daniel Stern thing, who is a wet bandit, if people know
a wet fucking bandit, you damn
wet
right
bandit. If people know, well, I'm trying to tell them who this is, because this is why I know that why this is what it is. So wet bandit's from Home Alone, and so Daniel Stern's the taller guy. Obviously the shorter wet bandit would be Joe Pesci. Still, so Daniel Stern's the taller guy. Is he supposed to be a Larry Bird-esque guy?
No, he just happens to look like him.
He just happens to look like him. That's why I always, when I saw this movie and I saw Daniel Stern, I always thought he must be playing Larry Bird, right?
No, this is the name of the movie. You're right about the basketball, and you're right about the Celtics. The name of this movie is Celtic Pride, and it's about two super fans, Daniel Stern and Dan Aykroyd, who absolutely love the Celtics, and Damon Wayans is like a star player on the Utah Jazz.
He's not even on the team.
No, they're fans, and they kidnap the player. They get him fucked up at the bar one night. They kidnap him, so he misses the next game, and they hold him hostage. This is kind of like that movie House Arrest mixed with shitty – this is a really bad early or mid-90s sports comedy that does, though, have a few lines in it that are very Apatow-esque, and you can kind of see the humor coming through, but it's diluted. It's almost like it's almost like watching Natural Born Killers and seeing bits of the Tarantino writing come through, but knowing that it's not really a Tarantino movie, you know? It's kind of like that. But, hey, I'm glad that you got this. Now, how do you know this? Because you've seen the poster so many times?
Yeah, because I've seen the cover of it. And I just – I always looked at Daniel Stern, and I always thought Celtic Pride – is that Celtic,
Celtic Pride,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, Larry Bird. Celtics, right?
Yeah.
I always looked at Daniel Stern, and I always thought – does he make a camel in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always thought Daniel Stern wants to be like the Larry Bird guy in it. I don't know what. He looks like him, though, doesn't he?
Yeah,
You will admit to that. He kind of looks like Larry Bird.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he's very tall and lanky and got that kind of
peckish nose there. And the curly kind of little hair and stuff. Yeah, so
what
I don't
was
know
it
why.
About the mid-90s that saw like a slew
this
of basketball
stuff was
films.
Just, yeah, it was pretty... regular, really.
You can go Blue Chips, Above the Rim. I mean, you got
Why
the
did
Sixth
it happen?
Man,
well, I
Eddie,
mean, you had Michael
Sunset
Jordan.
Park,
it was a high Space decade Jam. For the sport, you know, really, when you think about it.
I just think the NBA,
Larry
and
Bird, Michael Jordan,
married.
Magic Johnson. Yeah. You know, you think about that era and you really do realize, you know, even from the 80s, but especially into the 90s, it was a high period in that sport, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, in the 90s, you had basketball players that were full-on headlining movies like Shaq and Dennis Rodman.
And you had people paying into a lot of that stuff, whereas they were able to sell sneakers and just – they were able to sell ancillary things based on
these people.
Let me put
it to you like
this. It was amazing, really.
A movie like Celtic Pride, which did nothing in the theater.
Space
I mean, it made like
Jam.
$9 million.
Space Jam.
Did well.
Let's see that.
Celtic Pride did about $9 million in 96. You equate that now, and that outgrosses things like Mordecai, Black Hat. I mean, it really, it's like, it's unbelievable. I mean, people actually bought tickets to see this piece of shit. I mean, it's really crazy. This was back when.
But basketball was really big. I mean, we grew up then. I remember basketball being very big. I remember liking a lot of the people. I couldn't really – I mean, basketball, you know, basketball's still big nowadays, and I could definitely name you a lot of people who are probably just as big, if not bigger than those guys then. But it's not bigger than any other sport like it was back then. I don't know. Somehow in the 90s, basketball was just numero uno. It really was.
Yeah. Especially with the film. I mean, they made a lot of basketball movies, like I said, in that short period of time.
I
can't believe that you actually nailed
It's true, but I haven't seen it. Only because I remember it's the weird Daniel Stern connection with Larry Bird.
Now, is this because you saw the box working at Blockbuster as a kid?
Yes, yeah, okay. That's the only reason. Well, not even at Blockbuster as a kid, but I've seen the box, the VHS box in the video stores. I remember... you know, the poster. I know this for sure. Because Larry Bird I'm a kid of the 90s. You know, I know basketball. You know, I remember seeing this and thinking, that dude's probably Larry Bird, right?
Well, this was a Hollywood Pictures release, which was an offshoot of at Disney. So this was a very bad box art cover. This is about as random and cheap as you can get. Miramax
type
thing.
It's just a poster,
so. Yeah, very bad. Now, if you have a trivia question out there that you'd like for us to read on air, you can go ahead and put it on our Facebook account or post it on our page here on the website, and we'll read it on air, and we'll try to guess it with you. Or we'll just continue doing this, and I'll throw them at Trevor each week, unless you got one for me.
Keep throwing them at me. I'm bad.
That's what she said.
I'm bad, so.
You're a bad boy.
Every once in a while, I'll get one like this.
Hey, you knocked that one out of the park. I'm proud of you. Yeah, and I thought you would have gotten it because of the Judd Apatow reference, but you got it because of the Daniel Stern Larry Bird
Daniel
reference,
Stern, yeah.
Which just blows my fucking
Even
mind.
Weirder,
I'll be
right?
honest. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm mind sufficiently blown, okay? It's crazy. All right, let's do this little bit of movie news and we'll move on to some fun stuff, huh? Let's get a little homework out of the way.
Oh, boy.
Creed, the Sylvester Stallone co-starring Rocky Balboa spinoff, is going to be released in Thanksgiving of this year, which really comes quickly. I mean, it's kind of crazy that they're already rushing this into production. And this is going to be a very low-budget affair, it looks like, and a quick shoot. So we'll see how this all pans out. And Point Break, which is going to come out in August, very crowded release schedule in 2015, is going to get pushed back all the way to Christmas, which absolutely just boggles my mind. This is a movie that is about guys, or at least the original was, who were robbing banks to finance the ultimate summer, right? So it's a movie about summer. Why the fuck are you releasing it in winter? That's like releasing a Christmas movie on 4th of July. Does this make any sense to you? Honestly, this boggles my mind. I don't understand this. This has got to be a bomb, right? It's got to be terrible. And they're pushing it back.
I honestly have no idea. I mean, why? Either of these movies, I think nowadays, well, I don't know. I mean, does it make sense? Could you imagine either of these movies being released nowadays? How much money would they make?
Creed is going to be okay for what it is. I mean, it's going to be
business. See, you keep saying minor business. You're talking the high end of the low end, right? I mean, I don't know. Even if you release Rocky nowadays, does it have a shot at winning Best Picture? Oh, fuck yeah. Sure, absolutely. Nowadays, yeah, sure, it still does. Does it have a shot at earning more than, you know, $102 million? Probably not.
I don't think Creed does much better than what The Expendables 3 did on a lot of, you know, fronts. Like
right,
40
exactly. Million. That's what I'm saying. Like, you don't.
Now, Point Break, though, I think is a disaster unmitigated from the jump. No, I mean, this is.
Because it doesn't have a shot to begin with. I know. Yeah, no, exactly. It would be. It's out of place. To say the least.
And not only that, it now has a release date that totally pushes it out of place and puts it into a season when people aren't thinking about doing this kind of stuff. I mean, there's certain seasons for certain movies. There's a reason Michael Bay movies are released in the summer. You don't get that kind of shit on Christmas for a reason. So I think, they should really rethink that. I mean, they pushed Mission Impossible 5 up to summertime, which I think was a very smart move. We didn't talk about that on last week's show. To get out of the way of the Star Wars juggernaut. I don't know. Do you prefer a movie like that in the summertime? A Mission Impossible movie in the summertime?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or do you think that was to really get away from James Bond, which comes out in mid-November, to not have two major spy movies
but
going
at the same
time? But it's
not really... It's not the same thing, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of spy movies this year. We got this Kingsman, we got a Mission Impossible, we got a James Bond. There's a lot of spy shit going on. And I'm telling you, this Kingsman is really just a remake of If Looks Could Kill, the Richard Grieco starring film back in the day, which was written by Darren Star, who did, you know, 90210 and all that. And yeah, I said Richard Grieco. you know, the guy who hates Johnny Depp more than anybody else in the world. All right, let's move on. John Wick's going to get a sequel, which isn't surprising considering the directors Chad Stahelski and David Lynch are getting a lot of heat. We talked about them in our last podcast.
Do they have anything to do with the sequel?
They were developing the sequel, apparently. They're going to direct it, but Keanu will not be on it back because, you haven't seen this yet.
Doesn't that ruin the point of it? I mean, what's the sequel going to be?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess a spinoff of some sort.
How could the sequel be titled John Wick anything, right?
Yeah, Witwicky. One of my favorite last names of recent characters, the Witwicky. Ew. Sam Witwicky. The Wetwick.
I don't think that would work. You're gonna bring. Actually, you know what? I'm sure he's available for the John Wick sequel at this point.
Shia.
It requires full nudity, and he has to go absolute ape shit, but he'll do it.
He has to headbutt everyone on set at least once. And,
yes. He's available. He'll do it.
Yeah, he's very free right now. He's very free. He's into the method.
Yeah.
Lone Survivor director Peter Berg is going to reteam with his star Mark Wahlberg on Deepwater Horizon.
Why Lone Survivor director? Why not Battleship director?
Well, I was going to go back even further and say Very, Very Bad Things director.
Very Bad Things. That movie's actually better than Battleship. So I don't know. You're not. You're helping him.
Battleship is a guilty pleasure. I mean, it's not as bad as John Carter.
Oh man, you're pushing. It is as bad as John Carter. They're both as bad, man. They're both bad. Neither one of those are good.
Yeah, it really isn't good. Neither of those are good. And you think about that, and you go, "Oh, you know, Taylor Kitsch didn't really take But you know, he's had a better career so far.
But
than,
he hasn't.
Like, Liam Hemsworth.
He's just had an unfortunate pairings. You know,
he's really bad.
He's not bad himself. He just has some bad luck there on what he's picked.
It was a little too much too soon.
But you can't blame him, right? They all sound great. It's kind of like, it reminds me of the Entourage Aquaman thing. Because there ain't no fucking way you're selling an Aquaman shit as, oh, it's a big hit. It's like, really? It's Aquaman. What'd you guys do with it? Are you not going to say? You're not gonna give us the lowdown on what you actually did with Aquaman to make it a big hit? Please. Who are you kidding?
Yeah. Well, this Peter Berg, though, is the man who's going to take over for J.C. Shandor, who directed All Is Lost and A Most Violent Year, which I'll be talking about in our review section. So this is, I think, a major loss to this production. But Berg is going to bring
a different vibe to this. We got Wahlberg, though. We got Berg and Wahlberg.
Always on this. Yeah. But this is going to be, you know, you got Wahlberg coming up in Ted 2 this summer, and then he goes and does this. So I think this is kind of a one for them, one for us.
He's going to do another, and he's going to do another Transformers after this.
Yeah, that's on the.
So it's interesting. We're talking about, John Carter and obviously Battleship, but you have Wahlberg making very similar choices. So again, like, are they bad choices? He's been allowed, but he's going to make another Transformers movie. The last Transformers movie, everyone said sucked. But again, doesn't matter. Made a shitload of money, so the next one's going to make a shitload of money.
But he was also able to do The Gambler at Paramount for very cheap for doing.
All right. You got one in there.
You know, and The Fighter. And you know what I mean?
But again, Pain and Gain didn't help him any. And neither did The Gambler, right? They didn't help him. So what was the point of doing those? Nothing. They didn't help his career in any way. They didn't help his people looking at him.
He has these Christmas kind of releases like The Fighter and The Gambler and things like that that are. His bids, you know, if you will. He's done this throughout his career.
But do they help him? I mean, we've talked a little bit about these actor guys getting kind of pushed over to the side and not really mattering. And George Lucas has come out and said so much as far as directors as well. And we've said that a million and a half times, you know, that everyone's really, you're looking at people for hire here. You know, instead of hiring architects, people are hiring contractors, you know, if you will. That's really what you're looking at this point. Someone Which who's going to get the day's shots done. Someone who's going to get the job done on time.
Yeah, but you know what?
But isn't that what we're looking at? Isn't that what Wahlberg's, the decision that he's making? Like, doesn't that, and it makes sense.
Well, I want to address something you said
for that.
About that, about getting the days done, getting the shots done, and basically being a shot caller on set for the producers who are Marvel now and things like that, which has always been the director's medium always. So when you see a movie like The Equalizer or something to that effect, when you and I talk about it,
it has professional craftsmanship
about it, that's because there is a guiding hand in it. And I don't
that's
want to say not
Fuqua is really he's a fucking talented visionary artistic, with the director. Yes, visionary. He's artistically he knows visual wise you know how to stage a scene and the important shots to get to be able to make that work.
Right. So
that
stands out.
But above and beyond that, isn't it more, doesn't it go towards even the producer, like the dude that hires everyone to do everything and gets the writer in there and the writer who creates this, who writes this thing that matters when the girl comes and he says, talks about the book that he's been reading, you know, the old man and the sea, and says like everyone is who they are, they ought to be. And then he goes, and they have the scene where he has to let her go with the guy who's going to basically beat the shit out of her. And that scene in which he's allowing him to be who he is and he is who he is. And then after the fact, he comes up to them and fucks them up being who he is. Like, doesn't it matter? Everyone down the line who you hire, the screenwriter, the director, that everyone wants to make a good movie, you know, that not that it matters to you in the sense that it gives you, you know, like
it's a better experience, basically, I think.
An experience is a great way to put it, but I'm just saying it's not important that the story have value in the sense to the society that it has, you know, like, but it's just the story that itself has value that that you have set up some payoffs and that it goes beyond just getting the day, you know, that it's just, oh, we have Transformers and they're going to transform here, get the back plates, get this plate, you know, do this Michael Bay stuff and then make this, make this action scene work. Like, that's not enough for me anyways when I go see a movie. I want to see something that goes beyond that, that, bridges the gaps between those things.
Well, that's a great segue. Let's talk about, let's get in the review. And that's something I want to talk about the most violent year with you, because
all right,
this is something
I haven't
that
seen
goes,
this, but go ahead.
This is just released 2014, but it's getting a wide release this last weekend. I caught it last night in the theater. I loved this movie. I mean, this is the problem with us doing our 2014 release best of.
I saw the trailer before for this. I thought it was really good.
So many movies have come along that have tried to be Godfather-esque, and this movie effortlessly like mimics that in a sense that this dude looks like Pacino when Pacino was younger, mixed with an Andy Garcia kind of internal flair. And it's about a guy who's just – he owns a heating and oil company, and he's trying to stay on the right side of doing things, even though a mafia influence, a federal indictment's coming down. His wife is a little shady. Jessica Chastain's the wife. David Otiello, I can't say his name, the guy who played Luther King and Selma, is the federal agent, the assistant DA coming after Albert Brooks does a great little turn as the lawyer.
He's
yeah,
been doing
he's very
great
dry.
As, right, yeah, doing dramatic roles lately.
Same type thing. Him and Oscar Isaac were actually in Drive together, but this is a fantastic movie. It's not a movie for people that aren't going to pay attention. This is something that needs to be watched like The Godfather. It's really a movie about conversations that take place that have very different underlying tones and that take place in darkened rooms. And I just, some of these movies don't work for me. The Yards worked for me. That's a movie like this.
So good.
Right, and a most violent year I would put in that, where it's about a bunch of working class people and put in a situation that's it's above
does
their
the
heads.
Time period the fact that it is a period piece
yeah, it's 1981.
Does that take you out of it, or does that really work for it?
No, it really works. It's nice to see people that are making decisions aren't based on cell phones and computers
do they do a good job of it? The 80s is kind of difficult to do, I think.
Yeah, so. It's early 80s, so it's really still almost looking 70s. This looks, I mean, honestly, this the highest compliment I can give to this movie is that it looks like it was in a time capsule for like 40 years, and they just, it looks like it was directed by Coppola, starring Pacino, shot by Vilo Zsigmond, or whoever the guy at the time was.
Sure.
You know what I mean? This Gordon Willis, I think, shot this or edited it. I mean, this is beautiful fucking lighting in this movie, and editing and pacing and acting and writing. The fact that it's 2 hours and 4 minutes and flies by as it does, I mean, I thought this movie was going to be 3 hours because the density.
This is purposes, this is a low-budget movie.
It really is, and it's not going to make a lot. This was produced by A24, Annapurna Pictures, the Ellison
Group. I think is one of the few. These are the... this is Orion Pictures of today.
They're making these kind of
movies.
And they're hoping
that
one pops, and when one does, they'll be fine. But they lose a lot of money on these movies because they're letting artists do
But I don't care. Even when they don't make money for these movies are worth more than the majority of movies, to me anyways, that do make a shitload of money.
I think you'll like this movie. I want you to see this when it comes out, but you got to be in the right... This is a winter-type movie. I mean, this is a slow, rainy day-type movie because this is not... It's a slow burn. But if you like a movie where you, and I know you do, you like when characters are set up nicely, set up some payoffs, things that are, everything is very self-contained in this world, and it's this nightmare kind of corkscrew world. This guy is just, it's a movie where you just want to slap these people and say, get the fuck out already, you know, but very well done. And the guy, J.C. Chandor, I want to talk about this director. This guy is phenomenal.
How violent?
The movie is not violent at all. I mean, it's got a couple shootings and whatnot. But it's more about like the fact that his truck drivers are constantly getting mugged and beaten, and he can't ship his product throughout New York without it getting ripped off by the mob. So it's a very violent time, but he's trying to maintain his head. But this guy, J.C. Chandor, directed All Is Lost and Margin Call, two other really great films. Did you see All Is Lost yet? That Robert Redford movie
no,
where he's lost
not.
At sea?
Right.
Dude, are we going to go back to the Force reviews? Because I'll take one for you if you take this one to watch. Because I'll watch one for you if you watch this one.
I haven't seen it, yeah.
Oh, man.
It's streaming.
It's streaming, you fuck. Watch this movie, and I'll watch Snowpiercer, I guess. I don't know, something.
Oh, Jesus.
I can I get a mulligan on that one? Can I get a Taco Bell mulligan?
Jesus, just let that one go.
Yeah. There'll be no gelatin for you, sir. So my highest rating for most violent year, though.
Awesome.
Let's move on. Let's talk about the Burning Dead. I want to know about this this burning I have between my toes. Is that,
you want to know about this, huh? Well, this is a horrible movie.
Oh.
It's not a
horror
titled,
movie, but horrible.
Well, it's a horror movie, too. Originally titled Volcano something. What was it called? Volcano Zombies, which may have been a better title for it. Starring loosely, if you like to use the word starring, Danny Trejo.
Oh, he's a loosey-goosey.
He's, yeah, not really in this. If I don't know if people remember, there was a show on Nickelodeon where they used to tell tall tales around the campfire.
Like Goosebumps?
Not Goosebumps, but...
the Willies? What are we talking about?
Oh, jeez, I can't remember what it was. You know, it was the Midnight Society did it, and they... Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not up to my Nickelodeon.
So for the Midnight Society, they'd throw the thing on the fire and it'd grow. It wasn't Goosebumps. It was something similar to that. But that's basically Danny Trejo's part of this. He's telling a story to some. He's an Indian, a Native American, I should say, telling some story to Native American. I don't know. It's bad. I really don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this movie because it's horrible. Don't watch it. You know, this is the best thing I can say to it. It's not worth it. The movie is about a sheriff who's trying to rescue an estranged family. Why? I don't. Because they have to.
Because the plot requires them to. Yeah.
Because they got to eat up time. Because with all these movies, you know, it can't be the guy who directed this, did the cinematography, and also edited it. This also had like two other editors on it. Because you know you can't have enough editors. Apparently, on a
must have been a lot of footage,
Jesus,
whittled down to 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's all bad. These are from the producers of The Axe Giant that you tried to make me watch. You said was good.
I like The Axe Giant.
Oh, fuck you! You didn't even watch the whole movie. You're out of your fucking mind.
But I saw enough of it.
You didn't. No, you didn't. Watch the goddamn thing again. Watch it when you're not stoned. Okay, that'll be my thing to you. Watch that.
Are you talking about when I go out to society and they throw rocks? I don't know what you're talking about, sir.
I watched 5 minutes of that fucking thing where you left off on Netflix, and it is horrendous.
Well, this is what I get for sharing a Netflix account with you. You can tell when I stop watching shit.
The Burning Dead is worse than that, but from the same guys, I'd love to say it's worth it. It's not worth it at all.
Anyway, so that's obviously a negative review on the Burning Dead there.
Not even worth talking about because you wouldn't, and most people won't make it. You know, 10 minutes through this. This will
be something that'll sit on your list of your Netflix queue and never get watched.
Oh, if even then, this is perfect for 1:00 p.m. on the Sci-Fi Channel. You know, this is filler, is what this is.
That's my shit. Well, you did see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and you sent me a very enthusiastic text message just saying, movie magic is back.
Have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen the first one yet. So
you haven't even seen Rise?
I haven't seen the Rise or the Dawn.
Fuck's sake, man. Wow. Okay, yeah, we got a serious problem here right now.
That's my homework. Okay, folks.
You got to see Rise, but let alone Rise, this movie
is Dawn
just...
better?
Is Dawn better? Dawn is great. I mean, fucking Avatar, really? People are like, oh, Avatar is so good in 3D, and this is what CGI was made. Fuck Avatar, man. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is the fucking movie that CGI was made for.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Like, you just, these apes and the fucking, the shit, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, man.
I can't explain it any other way. I mean, you've probably already seen it. I shouldn't have to, right? I mean, I'm probably last to the table on this one. But whoa, how do they fucking make these Planet of the Apes movies? You know, look, I'm a fan of the originals.
Yeah, you watched all the originals this summer, right?
But they're fucking stupid. You know, yeah, but I love them. But they're fucking stupid. But these aren't stupid. They're fucking good. Like, you can't.
Yeah, I heard they're smart.
Yeah, smart, let alone. I mean, the way that they played the trailers for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes versus for when you see the movie, it just it blew my mind. Like, that's ingenious. This is a marketing a group that realized that the smarts, that the brains, the things that sold Rise of the Planet of the Apes are going to be the same thing that sold, they're going to sell Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And it's incredible. I can't believe that they played that. Somehow they got the team that created the movie and the marketing team together to make the marketing that just worked. Because this
would
is not at
this
all
on your top 10?
What you expect. Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
The trailers look great for this, but what you see is not what you expect from the trailers. They led you down a different path in the trailers.
You were pleasantly surprised, though, huh?
Yes, but it's better.
Okay,
yeah.
Well.
Really,
you weren't too
really
keen on
good.
Seeing this. I'm surprised that you responded to it at this point. But then again, not really because everybody has. Yeah, I know. I got late to the party on this.
They really do. I mean, the apes really are the stars of this movie, and they really show you how, you know, people. They take the people and they contrast them with the apes, and they make them similar. It's so good.
It's so good. So good. You cannot have a mango. All right. Well, I saw Wild Card, the Jason Statham movie that you liked the trailer of. Remember I saw this trailer.
I know.
Back.
I like this trailer. So tell me that the movie's good. Tell me the movie's
well,
good.
Well, you know. Okay. So I want to preface.
No, I don't want to precede or preface it. I want to know the movie's good. God damn it.
Well, I watched the original.
Jennifer Lopez isn't in it, so it has to be good, right?
No, Sofia Vergara is in it. She's in it for like one scene, and she doesn't go, yay.
I don't
chilling
like
for
her.
One scene. This movie, it's okay. It's a 2-star Statham.
But it has
film.
Rocky's son in it.
It does. I like Milo Ventimiglia a lot.
He's good.
And he's good in this movie, and he's good in his scene in this movie. And the problem is with this movie is that it's really not the problem with the movie. It's the problem with the script, which was the problem with the Burt Reynolds version,
sure.
Which back in the day, which was based on a William Goldman script who did this – or a book who did the script for both that movie and this movie. And it's still got the same problem. There's three good scenes in this movie. It's just like in The Heat, the 86 version with Reynolds. Is that the first scene's good? The scene with Ventimiglia as a getting tortured is really good, and the ending is really good, and all between that is so fucking disjointed. There's too much going on in this story. He's a chauffeur who is really a bodyguard who helps this nerdy kid who wants some protection when he goes out to a casino, but at the same time an ex-girlfriend comes over and she's gotten her ass kicked by a gangster who raped her, and she wants revenge, but is she really telling the truth? It's all over the place. And Simon
wow.
West shoots it nicely, but Statham really isn't the guy for this role either.
But
he comes off
a
little
great,
too much of a badass.
A secondary cast. We already mentioned, we've talked about Vergara, we've talked about Ventimiglia, but Tucci, Jason Alexander.
Yeah,
Anne
I know.
Heche, no good.
All underutilized. Anne Heche is a restaurant, a waitress. Alexander is the guy he shares an office with. Tucci, I don't want to give away his role, but really underutilized. Everybody is underutilized. I don't understand what attracted everyone to this script and why anyone thought this was going to be a great remake. There's a reason this isn't getting a theatrical release, in my opinion. This is a barely watchable, and I like some of the Statham unreleased stuff, like Blitz, I think is a very underrated movie, and I like Redemption. I know you didn't like that one, but I think
well, this
Blitz
kind of stuff
good.
Always reminds me of a very specific Sylvester Stallone movie, if you want to call
Get
it a
Carter?
Sylvester Stallone movie. No, not even Get Carter.
You're talking about Shade? Yeah, Shade.
Is it very like that? Like kind of just you expected more. I mean, obviously, I'm sure this isn't as bad as Shade because Shade's pretty fucking shitty, but you expected. Something
I watched
higher
the original. I watched that Reynolds one before I watched this, just to refresh my memory, because that one went through five different directors. Reynolds punched out the fucking director. Robert Altman was the director at one point. And for having five directors and a shitload of problems, it actually is a pretty smoothly coherent film, even though the story is rather incoherent. But I mean, as a movie, it doesn't have the fingerprints of five different people visually on it. Now, this movie has one writer, one director, one star, and all that, and it's still as convoluted as the other versions. So I don't get it. I was expecting a lot more, and I was really underwhelmed by this movie. I didn't like the trailer.
No good action.
Yeah, it's got a couple good action scenes, but they're out of place.
I like the trailer, but just not. So you're not.
I'm getting over the Statham thing. I got to see Homefront. You keep telling me about that. I got to see
Homefront. Homefront's so good.
I know. Everyone says that. I got to see that.
I mean, Jason Statham alone, but everyone else, supporting actors, are just excellent in that movie.
I've heard that. You saw Captain America 2, right? And you like this one as well.
I finally saw Captain America 2 yet again. Another movie I finally saw. And, yeah, I mean, don't you... You know, there are those movies you hear about that everyone's like, oh, it's so good, it's so good. And then when you see them, doesn't it piss you off when they're right?
Yeah, I know. I have those Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah.
Son of a bitch. I mean, this just, I was not a fan of the first Captain America movie.
I loved it.
Not a fan. I thought it was
boring. I like the first one better than this one, actually.
Fell asleep. Oh, BS. Fell asleep during the first one. It's boring. Believe me, I've seen the Agent Carter shit they're trying to sell on TV, too. Fucking boring. This movie, Captain America the Winter Soldier, holy shit, is this good. This is, I mean, hello, I found the new directors of the James Bond movie.
Yeah, right?
These guys mean, seriously, really can we make a fucking James Bond movie with this? The fucking action sequences are like, oh, this is an act? Oh, yeah, fuck yeah. Like, sign me up. I'm not as good as the Avengers as a movie, but as far as action sequences go, I mean, maybe damn near close. No, I would very say well directed.
This is probably the best one since the Avengers in the Marvel canon, in my opinion.
Yeah, easily. I don't think as good as a storyline as the Avengers, but definitely, I mean, kept my interest as far as direction-wise goes. And story-wise as well, I love that Samuel L. Jackson, you know, got some real time here. I like the whole fucking thing.
You liked it quite a bit. Yeah, I'm glad. I liked it too. I didn't give it my highest recommendation, but I did give it.
But they're so good at pulling things out. Like, even, you know, you look at the Maria Hill, Agent Maria Hill, the Colby Smulders character that came out of Avengers and stuff, and she has like a kind of a major role here. They're just there. I don't know. I'm looking at Marvel in kind of a different way almost after seeing this movie, of realizing, oh, like, this was the whole point of you're like pushing into TV. Like, you're doing so good at making small characters big, you know, which is weird. You just don't normally see.
Yeah, no, it was a solid movie. It was a very solid superhero film. Now, did you care for this one more than Spider-Man? Because I know we both like Spider-Man,
oh,
too.
Oh, I love Spider-Man, too. Way more than this.
Yeah.
Yeah, way more.
I would still say Spider-Man 2 was way more, to me, what I wanted out of a superhero
Far
movie.
Far more
this
cinematic
was...
than this. But like I say, action-wise, if I was to look at, well, just like I said, you know, the next James Bond movie needs to be like this. The action, this reminded me of you know, the third Mission Impossible in a way.
Like, yeah, it was J.J. Abrams and whatnot. Yeah.
As far as action-wise, you're thinking like, oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
I would say that's
yeah.
a comparison that's apt right there, especially with on the bridge, some of the sequences, and I could see that. I saw a Lifetime movie was starring Rob Lowe, which we talked about at the top of the hour. You know, I said
yes,
he'd been doing his best work there. This
but
is
he's
starring...
been doing a lot of movies like this.
He has been. This one he executive produced, so I think he's a little bit more involved with it now, and he kind of nurtured the material from what I read. Mm-hmm. And this is based on a true story, a sort of true story. And the way that Beautiful and Twisted, which is the name of the film, is done is kind of like a TV movie mixed with really over the top, very stylized, almost True Romance slash.
But he's got
Fargo slash Mommy Dearest in it. You know, it's really kind
he's
of
got
a satire.
The Robert Rodriguez, Paz Vega in it.
Yeah, she's the
Who's
gal.
Great.
And she is really good.
Is
she was in Spanglish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really good in this as well. This is about a guy who is a hotel heir. To the Fountain Blue Hotel in Miami. His parents owned it, and he really never had a childhood. He was pushed off to nannies, and he developed into the world of comic books. He was a Batman fanatic, and the guy who this is really based on had the second largest Batman collection in the world, and he kind of fancied himself Batman. And there's a lot of homage to the Burton Batmans, the initial scene. The fact that he owns the old Batmobile is kind of fun, and a lot of this stuff is kind of gimmicky. But he sees this lady, this stripper that he falls in love with, as his Catwoman, as his kind of nemesis
doesn't know what Vega.
She is this is Vega, and she fits that role very well, and it's fun on that level. And this movie is a lot smarter than I thought it was going to be for a Lifetime movie, a lot more clever and a lot more violent. This pushed the boundaries of what I thought they could show on Lifetime. I mean, people get stabbed in the eyeball. I mean, there's a lot of gruesome violence. It's called Beautiful and Twisted for a reason. And ultimately, it's a movie about a woman who kills her husband and doesn't get away with it. So, but it's got a sense of humor. It's got a little of intelligence. And I was a little surprised that Lifetime had this in them. I've seen some of the movies. I didn't think they had one of these in them, but they did. So, kudos. It's worth searching out. And if you wouldn't, I don't think you'll be disappointed in watching it. It's kind of like a. Remember those. It's almost like an HBO Pictures. Remember they used to do like the HBO original movies? Even like, I guess they still do. Beyond the Candelabra. Yeah. I can't say that word. Candelabra.
Yeah, no, I've been, you know.
You've been championing
more,
these for a
more
while.
Than surprised and amazed at a lot of the Lifetime original stuff. They're bold, to say the least. I mean, it's, and it's not.
Bold's a good word for it, is what it is, because it pushes
but
the
it is,
limits
but,
of what they're
it,
doing.
But it is something that, I mean, as far as women would want to see it, it's definitely, the whole point of it is kind of like a woman's struggle, you know. And you definitely get that from them, but they will go above and beyond. I don't know. And more so than just, you know, shock value, it actually has value to the overall story. And
yeah, and this was
that I've liked
a complete story. If anything, it reminded me of those little snippets in America's Most Wanted when they would dramatize like what was happening, but with good actors.
Well,
and
I'm
nice
big
production
on
value.
Yeah, I'm big on detective stuff, and
yeah,
and that's what a lot of these, even if they don't have a detective in them, they will display them as kind of like 60 Minute esque type things to you in a way. These made for TV movies for Lifetime, anyways.
This is definitely on the upper echelon of any of those that I've ever seen. You saw Vampire Academy, which I have been curious about since I reviewed it, because I put this on my top 10 worst of list, but I thought you might like it. I'm going to have to look up my review on this one, because I can't remember what I said on the air, but I remember off the
air
saying some pretty negative things about it.
I so wanted to like this. It's horrible. I mean, it's almost unwatchable. I love the initially I love the idea of it, but the way that they tell the backstory, the way they create, I guess the mythology is what you would call it. It's just so base, and like I don't like the fact that Twilight puts this to shame is kind of sad, right?
Right.
It really does. Twilight really puts this to shame.
Well, this movie also tried to be a comedy in a lot of weird ways.
It tried to be a goddamn Buffy episode.
Which was totally unacceptable
felt like
in a lot of ways.
It was just, yeah, and while I liked, you know, Zoe Deutsch, I liked Lucy, I liked everyone in this. I didn't have a problem with them. I did have a major problem with the characters they played, and in the overall way that the story played out just felt so.
To me, it felt like whatever made it to the screen wasn't what they tried, what they initially set out to do. Like it became, it got lost in translation somewhere.
And I'm
going to
disagree with that. She, the Rose character says to the Liz character at one point, this is not high school. You're trying to make this into a high school thing. It isn't. And in the end, it in fact was a high school thing. She just didn't realize it. And that's the pathetic thing about this, is that it's just not who gives a shit. It's literally, they did so good a job, not so good a job. They tried so hard to create a mythology around a small sect of people that they really only gave you a small sect of people. You only really got that high school experience, and that was it. And no one, so it doesn't matter to us so much whatever the fuck happens in this little high school that they're in. I really could give a shit less if they get run over by other vampires and killed.
Well, this was adapted by Daniel Waters, who did Heathers, and directed by Mark Waters, who did Mean Girls. And you could see,
yeah,
kind of the
sure, but
of both
Mean
those,
Girls
but
is
neither
far
is successful.
More...
Yeah, it's got a better script.
Because you got Mean Girls, you obviously, yeah, you have other people involved, and Heather's as well. You know, this just is not. I understand it, but at the same time, this is one of those things where you need someone if you're going to, you know, at least be of all, you need at least like a Diablo Cody to be able to at least make this. Something that
what is, I recall is, about this was that there was so much backstory I had to stop it and then rewind, go back two chapters on the DVD, mm-hmm. and rewatch it to make sure that I just didn't, like, because I had to get shit clear again of, like, who was doing what to who, because it was so dense, because they were trying to set up so much so quickly, that, like, and they wanted you to be up to speed with it like it was second nature, but, you know, we don't have 22 episodes here.
I know, it felt very like a CW show, and if it had been that, maybe it would have been more successful in what it was trying to do. It's not as bad as I, Frankenstein, but yeah, it does have...
It totally doesn't go on your top 10 last year. I have a top 10 worst of last year. Come on.
Maybe. I mean, the problem with this is it's so just dismissive. I don't know if it makes it on that.
I just thought there was never-ending I can't speak right now.
It's not as bad as I, Frankenstein in that sense.
No, that's terrible.
So
that's terrible.
There is that, I think, to compare it to at least, but... Yeah, certainly it's not. It does try. It tries the Buffy. It tries the Joss Whedon thing. It doesn't work at all.
We both.
The actors, I think, are great, but yeah, the movie.
Yeah, I think especially Zoe Dish is.
She's great. I thought a lot of her deliveries were good. It was the dialogue just was no good. You know.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with Trailer Addicts, and we'll wrap up tonight's show.
Proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Brain on bread!
Thank you for that intro, Mr. Samuel L. Jackson. My name is Brad, and I'm the host of the Picking Brains podcast, where you will find interviews with the most unique minds of the horror genre. So go to picking-brains.com and check the podcast out. And I have to be going now because here are some zombies.
Brains! Brains! Brains!
You know, there's something interesting about zombies that I've learned, especially from watching The Burning Dead. And that is that... everyone says they want brains, but they always eat the intestines. I think they want poop.
Oh. We're shitty. You know what? I think that
it might be a little
Young...
shitty, but I think it's true. They want poop, right? They eat the... Why, if they want brains, why do they go for the intestines first, where the poop is? Why do they go where all the poopy is?
They're getting that fauna.
You think it's helping them out? It's keeping them regular?
Fauna. That sound, that score in there is from Hellraiser, the Christopher Young score. That's got to be...
Sure.
My favorite all-time scary movie score, but even better than Halloween, The Nightmare on Elm Street. That's a terrifying score to me. That score, I love that score. I can't always forget about that score until I hear it. Are we doing Trailer Addicts?
Trailer.
Right, yeah.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All right. Well, as the captain says, shields up, red alert. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think of these trailers?
I think I'm putting my shield up as we talk to this next
You're putting these trailers up.
I don't want to get anything on
what
me.
You got?
Talking about
what
this.
You got?
We got our boy there, Mikey, Magic Mikey. And not Michael Douglas. Magic Mike XXL, which is the sequel to the 2012 hit, or was it 2013? I don't know, shit, a couple years ago, but regardless.
2012.
Yeah, monster hit back in the day. This sequel is now out. What do you think of this trailer?
I'm confused. You. Am I not confused? What's
going on in this trailer?
Yeah, why is there, I mean, I get that there's money, but why is there a sequel?
Because the first one made a lot of money and it had.
No, I get that. I get that. But what? Why is there a sequel?
I don't know. But I'll tell you what. This thing is at least edited to about an inch of its life. It's edited really well.
Who's the girl in the first one?
Was Cody Horn, which has now been replaced by Amber Heard.
Yeah, I know. Amber Heard is the way you like to remember it.
I do. I just Amber Ways of Grace.
Yeah, she's nice looking. Yeah, point being to me, I felt when I watched this, I felt the same thing I felt when I saw the Ted 2 trailer was a lot of money got made. Where's the female lead? What happened to what? Where's the story? What happened to the fucking story? What happened to the fucking shit that I went through in the first movie?
Yeah, well, Ted 2 at least has a story on screen. This isn't,
you know,
really a
I'm
trailer.
Sick of this shit. I'm really sick of this shit. If you're gonna fucking sell me a story where a dude's a piece of shit and he fucking falls in love with a lady, she turns his life around, he falls in love with her, and then the next movie, because the first movie made so much money, you're gonna turn that shit around, you're gonna try to sell me again?
Yeah.
This dude's such a piece of shit, he didn't learn his fucking shit in the first movie, and I gotta watch him learn this shit again in the second movie?
I will say that whole beginning with the pony song and with the welding,
I think it looks
a little
great.
Strange. But
it comes off strange.
Well.
You gotta admit that the movie looks good. It looks entertaining. Like, I'll give it that.
Yeah,
I'll
the
be
first
like,
one was good.
I'll be like, oh yeah, okay, like this looks entertaining, looks fun. I'll definitely watch it. But again, you've ruined the specialness that was the first movie. You've totally torched it for, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. You've sold out, basically.
What you're saying is this would be like Rocky II coming back and there's no Adrian. There's new Adrian. He's got to go.
Essentially,
he's somebody
right?
Else.
He's doing. It's like Rocky One again, but he's all over again. Except,
he's courting somebody
else. Of course,
else,
that's not what happened with Rocky, you know, because it was smart.
It's actual continuation of a story.
Right. That would be nice. Can I get that again? Is that possible?
No, but what you
feels
can
feels like
get
it isn't. Feels like it isn't possible.
A lot of gyration and apparently a lot of over sexualized behavior, because that is
but
coming
why,
in.
He's like doing work on metal. He's doing metal work, but then why? Like, he listens to the song and then he decides he's gonna dance.
Yeah, who knows?
I'm a little.
Who fucking knows? This is now turning one step away from a Step Up movie. Okay,
right? Close. Am I wrong? Yeah. I thought interesting.
That whole sequence is a little Step Up to me, but
okay. Well, look, I thought the first one was fucking amazing. This one, I don't know. I mean, have we lost something by losing our?
Nah, they're just selling the base elements of what they did last time. But we'll see here.
Are you sure? I mean,
I think so.
So this to you is just as good as the first one.
Well, the teaser for what it is, like I said, it's edited to perfection. I mean, this thing is cut after that initial little dance sequence. This thing is cut very well.
I mean, so you're saying Gregory Jacobs equals Steven Soderbergh?
Soderbergh is behind the lens.
I mean, are you worried about that at all?
No, not really. I mean, I think that if anything, this is going to – well, I think it's going to be a huge hit because they're selling it in the exact same way they sold the other one.
Sure.
And for two, I think that I actually like
– yeah, I don't
Amber
think they're
going to
miss the
better.
Mark on this. I think they're going to still make this to be a drama. I think they're still going to push this to be not some
– this is going to be dark.
Just some,
I mean, this,
skin –
they're selling this as a great time.
Flick,
it's going to be a dark
gonna,
love story.
I agree. Well, just as the first one was, really,
right,
when
right.
you think about it. I don't think they're going to miss the mark on this, but I do – yeah, I still feel like we miss just in movies in general. I feel like we miss the specialness of the originality of the thing that we create that is created and that is handed to us, you know, and especially in the sequels where they just rip out the leading lady as if she doesn't matter. And replace
you're
her
still
with
boiling over that
else.
Mila Kunis thing. I got you, bro.
That is
believe
well
that right
because I love Mila Kunis. I want to watch her again in Ted 2.
I think I got a Mila Kunis growing on me right now. I can't explain it. What did you think about this Poltergeist trailer? I got a chance to catch up with this one. I was never the biggest fan of the original. I didn't take to it. This looks good.
It.
Yeah, this looks real good, right?
I think this is going to be great.
I think it's going to be
Moreover,
a huge hit.
Moreover, because I think Sam Raimi is the only person, especially even with Spielberg out there right now, that can pull off Spielberg.
You think he's out Spielberging Spielberg?
At this point, I do think he is. This movie looks like as if Spielberg, you know, decided to make this movie now. That makes sense, right? Don't tell me the special effects. You didn't see that, and you were like, "Is that from the 80s?"
I think this actually looks better than the original. This plays very
Fuck,
well.
Man, it's like, yeah, it's like they made the first one was like early 80s, right? So it's like they
made 81, 82.
It's like they're making that nowadays with this today's special effects, but it's like the same movie. I think that's great. And I think Sam Raimi, who I've been blown away with recently, as far as Spielbergian techniques with today's technology, has just done a great job. And so I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, this does look good. I mean, I don't know what else to add here that you said at all. It's pretty much, especially in 3D, this looks like it's going to be fantastic. And Carol Ann, I mean, that's going to be great here. You know, I mean, that's very iconic images, and they do. It doesn't feel, strangely enough, it doesn't feel like Fright Night. It doesn't feel like a ripoff. It feels like it's actually an organic reboot.
The wonderful, the shocking, the electricity that they used to have in the 80s and the 70s. Remember that shit? They used to draw it on. But it was electricity, right? It was like lightning. But they have that in this. Great.
Yeah, this does look like a great throwback. I can't wait to see this one. Furious 7 was given a Super Bowl trailer, and now they've released a full-on feature trailer. This is a lot different than the teaser that we saw a while back. It gives Statham's character a lot more backstory, and I don't think this trailer does anything to enhance the. I don't think it builds on that teaser that we saw some months ago. I actually think this actually does a disservice to the movie. It looks a little bit.
Really?
I was bored by this trailer by the time it was over. Yeah, honestly.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would disagree. I think that's kind of a bit of amazing that you. So you think this trailer's worse than the teaser?
I think, hit my limit of the Fast and Furious mythology. I just don't give a shit any longer about this mythology.
I felt that about the first teaser, and then this trailer won me over.
Come on, with the cars flying through the building.
I loved it. It was so ridiculous. Oh, it's great.
So come on. It's the same building that Cruise scaled.
He does it
in Mission Impossible.
Yeah, he does it, and they drive the car through the thing, and then he gets out of the car, and it drives off the edge. Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, man. Okay.
It's so stupid. It was so dumb. I was just like, yeah, that's Fast Furious.
I can't tell.
I'm good.
If that's crazier or the fact that Jason Statham's putting an ass whooping on the Rock. I can't tell which.
No shit, but it looks so ridiculously fun. Is my thing about it is that I'm watching it. I'm just thinking action, and what's that action? Oh yeah, okay, I'm good. I'm good.
You didn't like the last couple of Fast and Furious movies.
I liked the fifth one.
Did you see part 6?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
You see what I'm saying? And now you got the
but
second part
one,
of that one. You're telling
this
me.
This one looks like it has a lot more action to it. I'm good. I'm good on it. I liked it.
Well, Furious 7 for me is going to be, I think, the last stop in the Furious franchise.
Kidding me? I hope they do that shit, but they're not going to end it. This shit's going to go till 2010.
2010?
Good lord, 2020, I mean.
So just rebooted it in 2010.
Holy shit. Yeah, no. How
we've
can
had five
not?
Since then.
Yeah. Do you think this is going to make less than the other ones?
I'm telling you, 5, 6, and 7 feels like a separate trilogy. Like it's own thing. It's unbelievable. I don't even know where
shit.
We are anymore.
No shit. It's too much.
It's gotten to the point where it's like a Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm like, all right, which one did that happen in? Now, what
I saw 5.
That?
Yeah, I feel like 5 is really the it's it. That's it. Like that's everything. Everything after 5 is gonna be 5. You know, it's just like that's kind of
that's
I'm
the
like,
mold
I'm,
now.
I'm good. Like it's like yeah, this is 5. I'm like yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm good. Y'all got yeah, it's good. What do you got? The Rock in there? All right, whatever.
They got a lot of people in there.
My only question now is where do they go now, right? Who do you get to replace Paul Walker?
They're writing that character right now. I think that house blowing up is starting to, you know, I think they're trying to lead around to some things. And
you think he's just gone? They don't even try to replace him? They just
I think they just go
with The Rock and Diesel, and that's it.
And then I think there's about a minute and a half montage of clips of him hanging out with the cast and crew right before they do the credits just to get everyone fucking in tears to make $1 billion worldwide.
Dedicated. Because, you know, every movie
dedicated
to him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm sure Brandon Lee's family is stoked the crow's dedicated to him.
Yeah. You know. By all means.
You had me watch this trailer for Beyond the Reach, or The Reach as it's known. This is a Michael Douglas. Speaking of Mikey Douglas, Michael Douglas has been up in arms lately in our podcast. He's just really upset with us.
What?
Yeah, we got an email from Michael Douglas. You didn't know about this?
No, I haven't seen this shit.
Michael Douglas is all pissed off. Oh, yeah, he's all pissed off at us.
He's got more throat cancer from eating vagina? What's the problem?
That's right. Somebody said, Michael, what's your favorite fish? And he said, vagina. And, it's crazy. But no, this is a trailer for a thriller starring the 92-year-old father of Michael Douglas. No, actually, it was not Michael. Not Kirk Douglas. Right? He looks like Kirk Douglas
is
a couple
is
shots.
Dead.
No, he's not. He's kicking with Pacino. They're both just CGI'd.
Kirk Douglas is alive?
Kirk Douglas is 174
Shut
years old.
I'm looking at this
right
now. Kirk Douglas is dead.
Kirk Douglas
you got to be out of your mind. Kirk
Spartacus
Douglas
lives.
Alive?
I am Spartacus.
Shut the fuck up. Let me look this up right
now. He's alive. I mean,
holy shit, he's 98 years old.
I told you. I told you.
Do you think he'll hang out with me?
I think he carried down
the
original tablet.
Where's he
going to
go? He's probably bedridden. I could probably go hang out with him.
He's probably in better health than Michael Douglas. Are you kidding me?
Good Lord. Wow. That is surprising, to say the least. All right.
Yeah. I told you. Yeah. So getting back to this review here.
I'm blown away. Anyhow, Beyond the Reach, I like this fucking trailer.
Yeah, I like this trailer, too. I'd see this movie. Michael Douglas is a billionaire who goes out on a safari, basically, in the middle of the desert with his guide, accidentally kills a man, and then tells his guide he has to make it back to civilization on his own, hoping that he dies in the intervening time so that he can't get back and tell everyone what Douglas did. Great concept. Good-looking movie. I like movies that are man versus nature, man versus man mixed in, kind of like The Edge and things like that. Really
even 127 Hours or
right.
Whatever that was, kind of a survival type movie. What
Killing
was,
Season was another one like that. You didn't like that one, but it reminded me of that.
No, but
De Niro
very similar
Travolta.
To that. Yeah, and there's the one with the bear with
The Edge.
The Edge, right? With Anthony Hopkins and all that shit. It's similar to that, but darker than a lot of those. You know. Yeah, I think this looks great. Jeremy Irvine, who's the guy in this, has been in some stuff, but not... he was the guy in War Horse, Woman in Black 2.
I don't think this is getting a large release, though. I think this is going
to
be...
Oh, no, by far, this is a smaller release, but I think just as well, because really it's the kind of movie that you expect to get a small release.
Yeah, this looks solid, though. I mean, honestly, I'd say this was... one of the most effective trailers that I saw on today's show.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I'd be more than willing to check this out, especially even in theaters. I think this is going to be a cinematic taking place in the desert out there.
Yeah, it looks like
it
shot very well.
To. Yeah.
Yeah, I like this kind of stuff. Now, Walter is a little independent film that you had me check out the trailer for here about a guy who is a theater.
We're going all sideways here. Were you trying to make... Oh, no, we're going down the list.
Yeah, I'm going up and down her dress. I'm heading for home base. I am closing the deal.
We had Ventimiglia again in this one. He's our favorite.
Oh, yeah, Milo, our boy Milo there. But this is a guy who thinks he's Jesus Christ. A ticket terror at a movie theater thinks he is Christ.
He can tell people if they're going to heaven or hell. That's basically. He's a ticket taker at a local movie theater. We have, I'm guessing who's the devil, right? Show up, wanting him to say, if he's going to go to heaven or hell. I'm not sure. Do we know if it's the devil or not?
We don't know if it's the devil, but I got that too.
But it's definitely
ghost,
someone he's,
cause
he said,
like
something you're not living, you know,
it's a guy in purgatory is maybe what it was.
Was my feeling that he was the devil, but he was definitely tempting him in some way. And he was trying to push him to ask the secession stand girl out and this and that. And it was it's a weird little movie.
It's a quirky little independent.
I think looks great.
I think it looks good. I wouldn't say great, but I like
think
that.
Great is the word here.
I think it looks a little too self-conscious and might veer into that Wes Anderson Rushmore territory.
Yeah,
but if it stay away from that,
no,
I think it might be solid.
Don't stay away from it. I think it should go ahead straight for that. You know, really independent films like this, they don't make very much anymore, and I'd like to see more.
This trailer strangely reminded me of a movie that I don't know if you ever saw, but I'm sure you have because you like Luke Wilson, called Henry Poole Was Here.
Sure, I love Henry Poole Was Here.
It kind of reminded me
Big
of that
fan
a little
of that.
Bit.
Yeah. Like that
but
movie.
You know what I mean? Kind of where a guy's off on his own little religious trip.
Sure, and in that movie he sees
him, he's nuts.
Jesus at the side of his house.
Yeah, in a water stain inside of his house.
Water stain, yeah. Sure.
Which is, I mean, I think Henry Poole Was Here is a very underrated movie in the Luke Wilson canon,
I
and
think,
just,
yeah.
a good movie in general. I think more
but
people
that's what
watch
I
that.
when I see this, I think very much of that. You mentioned independent film, like that's kind of that's very much an independent esque film, and that's why I think I hope this goes there.
Yeah, if it goes there, I'll like it a lot more. But we'll see. Like I said, I just don't want it to be that smart ass Rushmore type. You know, condescending type attitude, which a couple times in the preview I got that vibe, but mm-hmm. William H. Macy has some nice lines in this, and he's mm-hmm. always a welcome sight. And Neve Campbell, who refuses to age. I mean, she looks great still for her age.
Yeah. Jim like Gaffigan, Virginia Madsen, the cast
he's
is
got
great.
A good cast, yeah, especially for independent. Another independent film, this is a horror film, albeit, by Adam Green, the guy who did Hatchet, is Digging Up the Marrow. It's a strange title, but it's a found footage horror film starring Ray Wise as a guy who finds a subculture underneath our world that is basically a mirror of our world, correct? Something to do with that?
Yeah.
I like this trailer. Against my better judgment, I kind of think this is a good trailer. I like this trailer.
I mean, here's the deal. This is a wonderful trailer.
It might be a better trailer than movie because it plays well for three minutes, but I don't know if they're a 90-minute movie.
Well, here's the kicker. This is Blair Witch Projects meets Nightbreed.
I like Nightbreed a lot.
And that's what
I know
this
you
is.
Do. Is that what this is? Okay.
Isn't it not? Is this not
yeah.
just... He's
especially
met,
with those drawings.
It's about a guy, Ray Wise, who, if you don't know who Ray Wise is,
watch some more fucking movies.
Wonderful
there.
Character actor, but yeah, I mean, from RoboCop to Twin Peaks.
No, he was in Walker, Texas Ranger.
He is in pretty much
for one
everything.
Episode. Yeah, Rising Sun,
in,
whatever you want.
Yeah, he's in a great show. If I remember what it's called, I'm looking up. He plays the devil in a show.
He was also one of the henchmen who takes out Peter Weller in the original RoboCop.
Right, in RoboCop. I said RoboCop.
Did you? I didn't know if I heard the RoboCop in there.
Yeah, you heard RoboCop. I said RoboCop. He's
in you did.
Reaper, which is Reapers is a great show that was on. I mean, he plays the devil in that, and he just does. He's so good as the devil. But as I said, obviously he was from Twin Peaks. You know, RoboCop, all that kind of stuff. He's been in shit. He's unmistakable. He's a character actor. You won't miss him. So he plays this guy who's essentially found a city of monsters, right? Which is basically what Nightbreed is, right? Median or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever
yeah,
it's
that,
called.
That.
The city of monsters that are from Nightbreed. And that's what this reminds me of is a Blair Witch Project version of that, right? Where the guy... explains that to him, and then the monsters come and get him, which is in Nightbreed is very similar. The monsters wanted to stay hidden, and if you fucked with them, they kind of try to kill you.
Yeah, it was almost a tragedy in the sense that guy brought it upon himself in Nightbreed. This, to me, looks very intriguing. Some of these moments in here are really effective in a trailer. You know, the shock moments work beautifully. But also, you can see that there are some... problem that they have with the found footage stuff. Yeah, you know, it's a little low budget there.
It's low budget.
So, but you know, I'll give it to that. This between
but
this and that
right?
one that Bobcat Goldthwait did about Bigfoot
oh, which
a year
looks
or
great
so back.
As well. Both of those. Yeah, this and that, I'd say, yeah, both. And this is old. This is, obviously, it's only first few months of 2015, so this is a year old at this point. But, yeah, whatever happened to the Bobcat Goldthwait thing? Where's that at?
I don't know.
I forgot
like,
about
somebody released that already?
That shit up.
I'd like to look at this thing.
Yeah, that and this definitely, I think, for found footage stuff, has the you know the highest possibility of being worth a shit.
Yeah, they both kind of had that same look about them, you know, and they worked as trailers. Like I said, not sure about a movie, but as a trailer, definitely worked. I'm still blown away you got the trivia tonight. I mean, I can't believe... that you answered a trivia question.
I didn't really get it, yeah.
But you did, though. You got the basketball. So you got the, you know, name all or part of, and you did get it. So
I even got the team. Yeah, I knew the team.
Yeah, I'm fucking surprised.
But only because Daniel Stern looks like Larry Bird.
I mean, that's the strange connection you got there. But, hey, you got the connection. So
I finally got one.
I wonder if anyone else out there got that one. I hope they did, because I mean,
well, it apparently had nothing to do with anything. So
I mean, I think it sold about 2.1 million tickets. Yeah. So people put shoes on. That means 2 million people put their shoes on, went to the theater, and saw this movie. So wow, that just depresses me. Think about that. It's like thinking that the tuxedo grossed, you know, adjusted like $90 million. Like, who the fuck went and saw the tuxedo?
Not, I saw it on video. The tuxedo's not bad, though.
Tuxedo's not bad, but people went to the theater and saw it.
I know, but it's really, it's not bad. Like, I can't really knock the tuxedo too much, because it's really, it's not that bad.
It's not as bad as, like, The Medallion. You know, that's bad.
No shit, yeah, that is bad. You
know? Or Bulletproof Monk. Those are fucking bad, but
Bulletproof Monk's not that bad, but yeah. The tuxedo's the tuxedo is surprisingly better than it fucking ever should be.
We just gave an endorsement to the tuxedo. There you go. You're welcome. Well, that's going to wrap up our show tonight on episode 264. As always, you can hear us on moviemavericks.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you may get your podcasts from. Go over to Box Office Ace, get in the prediction game. Yeah, I like to flick the bean. And if you haven't done so, play alongside Trevor and I. Go to moviemavericks.com, get in the game or the giveaway to give away or win a copy of Interstellar on DVD or Blu-ray. If you have made it to this portion of the show, you deserve it. Get yourself some Taco Bell. All right, guys, we want to say thank you for joining us. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard. We are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!